My name is Luca. Join me Sunday at 4 for Folk Plus or on the WJFF archives. I live upstairs from you.
Welcome to the Local Edition. News and information to keep you connected in the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania. I'm your host, Patricia Robayo. It's Friday. In the second half of the show, we'll be learning about PFAS and why that chemical is at the Sullivan County International Airport. Also, we'll be checking in with Sullivan 180. But first, pediatric COVID-19 hospitalization in New York has increased nearly 2,000% since November 1st. And that's according to Garnet Health. But what can parents and guardians do to protect their young children? Well, Jason Dole spoke to the medical director for Women's and Children's Services for Garnet Health. And spoke to Dr. Andrea Puncha to find out just that, about how can we protect children during this trying times of COVID. Here's our conversation now.
It's been a while. It's good to talk to you again.
Likewise, Jason. I hope you're staying safe and healthy. Your voice sounds like you're in good spirits. Great to hear. Happy New Year.
Yes, and Happy New Year to you. So we're checking in with you because, you know, we heard that pediatric cases of COVID-19 were on the rise. Last week, Governor Hochul even mentioned it specifically, saying this is one of the biggest at-risk groups right now in terms of COVID-19. Why are pediatric COVID-19 hospitalizations on the rise?
So it's a very important topic to be discussed at this point, Jason. We're seeing inundated numbers, like really overwhelming numbers of pediatric patients coming to our emergency departments, urgent cares. The reason it is on the rise, every winter we have a lot of respiratory infections, but given the holidays and the commingling and travel, I think the virus has spread to a lot of populations. And this particular strain, the new Omicron viral strain, seemed to be affecting the children a lot. And they are presenting to the ER with a lot of symptoms. And especially this specific age group, pediatric age group, has not been vaccinated, you know, completely, just like the adults are. So we have a lot of age groups, less than 5, who are not vaccinated at all, and 5 and older, where we got recent approval, and there are majority of children who need to be vaccinated to fight this infection.
Yeah, the timing was against everyone in that, like, they were among the last groups to be clear. The youngest people were the last to get approved to even be able to get a vaccine, correct?
That is correct. We actually received approval for the older population, the geriatric population first, because of the immunocompromised status or the older age groups who are susceptible to these virus. And the adult population was more studies were done and the vaccine was approved. But pediatric age group, I wish they had all these vaccinations given to pediatric population, because schools, daycares, you know, children, you can't really teach children hygiene 100%. They are commingling, they're running around, they're mixing with all different age groups and populations. So they're very likely to get infected a lot more than adults do.
Given that, and given that they were a population who was just starting to pick up on vaccinations, and then this Omicron variant comes along, are you seeing more children getting vaccinated because of this surge?
We are definitely seeing a lot of parents, a lot of schools, a lot of people being more responsive and reaching out to us requesting the vaccines, because there's been an overwhelming burden on the entire community on this. So we are seeing increased numbers of parents coming in. But I would like to advocate for more such calls, more such responses, because it's still not adequate. We do see a little bit of an increase from previous times, but I would request all the parents, families to reach out to the pediatricians requesting for the vaccines, because that is the only way the antibodies can protect against this virus.
Now, when it comes, we've also heard that the pediatric cases of COVID are on the rise, and that includes hospitalizations. When children are admitted to the hospitals, what symptoms are you seeing?
So usually the respiratory symptoms of runny noses, coughs, upper respiratory infections are given supportive care managed at home. The children who are coming to our emergency rooms that require hospitalizations, I mean, the symptoms are shortness of breath, they are dropping in their oxygen levels, and they require, and they won't be able to take adequate breathing, so they are also not able to eat. So these children not only develop pneumonias, upper airway obstructions, and difficulty breathing, respiratory distress, but also dehydration because of lack of food intake. So it really, the children who are getting admitted are very sick.
Are there any early signs that parents can pick up on that so they can take some action before things get as bad as their child struggling to breathe?
Yes. You know, a lot of viruses simulate the same symptoms. That is the whole thing. Like, I don't want anybody to downplay these symptoms. Once the child has a runny nose or cough, fevers, you know, not eating well, throwing up, or diarrhea, any sick symptoms, parents should be vigilant, hydrating them and also getting them tested. And care should be taken if they have little babies at home or people receiving cancer treatments. If their immune systems are suppressed, I would keep them away from the children who have these symptoms. And, you know, I really suggest that parents pick up on this upper respiratory symptoms.
And when they do, what's the first steps that they should take? Is it just calling their regular pediatrician?
Yes, actually, recognizing the symptoms is the first thing. And because of the highly contagious nature, I would not neglect washing hands is one thing. And they should immediately call the pediatrician explaining the symptoms. And if the pediatrician thinks that the patient can be swabbed for a test, they can, based on the pediatrician's guidance, they can follow them. And sometimes the pediatricians, based on the symptoms, can urge them to go to the ER or emergency room or urgent care or their office, depending upon the symptoms. So it's very important they reach out to their pediatricians. And at Garnet Health, we have pediatricians in the outpatient setting, both in Sullivan County and Orange County. And the number to reach us at is 845-333-7575. Any questions on the viral infections, the COVID infections, symptoms, children not doing well, or any questions on vaccinations, they should be reaching out to our pediatricians.
Dr. Panthota, in case anybody's reaching for a pen right now, can you give that phone number two more times?
Yes, please. And the number to reach Garnet Health, to reach a pediatrician or a team member in the pediatric group, would be 845-333-7575. This is the general number, and it will prompt you to the option of clicking the button for pediatrics. So, again, I repeat, it's 845-333-7575.
Is there anything else that you want listeners to know that we haven't even touched on here?
Yes, actually, once again, emphasizing that vaccines are protective. Please do not have fears about the vaccinations. I would advocate for parents and families to reach out for pediatric population to get vaccinated as they're available. And call your pediatrician if you see children with upper respiratory symptoms, especially when they're having difficulty breathing, shortness of breath. Please reach out for help. And Garnet Health, we have emergency department open 24/7, both at Catskill campus, Middletown campus. We have urgent cares until 8 p.m. Please reach out to us anytime. And practice safety. I would avoid traveling to crowded areas, traveling in crowded environments, lots of hand washing, and stay safe. And please be vigilant if there's someone with a weaker immune system at home to keep them away from any kind of contact with sick children. So please reach out to us anytime if you need any help.
The last thing I want to ask you is, because you are director for Women and Children's Health Services, and I know the last time we spoke, you were concerned about also the mental and emotional health of families, specifically the mental and emotional health of mothers. And I was wondering if there's anything new on that front that you want folks to know.
Yes, absolutely. You know, this is one of the toughest times for parents and children, because I feel my heart goes out to all those adolescent children and any age group who, you know, really don't have the coping skills, and they're requested to isolate or quarantine, and school schedules virtual learning and back to in-person and then back to virtual learning and all these changes, you know, this must be taking a real toll on children. And for parents who are working parents especially and who really need to go home to their children and try to parent and teach them all this, it must be really hard. But remember that during these toughest times, we're all human. We all need to reach out for help. And if there's any concerns like that emotionally, if this is taking a toll on everyone, because stress can absolutely take a toll on you, me, and everybody, we would like for you to reach out to Garnet Health at the number I had provided, 845-333-7575, because we have child and adolescent psychiatrists who see children outpatient setting. Reach out to your doctors. Reach out to the pediatricians. And please find family members to talk to, and communication always helps. Every day, my suggestion is to communicate with your children and ask them how they feel, or have them write down in a journal asking them to write about their feelings. So emotional health is so important for this wellness as well as physical health. So I wish you all to stay safe and practice safety, and please get your children vaccinated. That's my message.
All right. Well, Dr. Bunthod, I thank you so much for joining us again.
Thank you, Jason. I really appreciate your time and hope you have a wonderful evening and have a wonderful day.
You too. We've been talking to Dr. Anjana Bunthod, Medical Director of Women and Children's Services for Garnet Health Doctors. I'm Jason Dole for The Local Edition.
This is The Local Edition. I'm Patricia Rabao. It's Friday. Moving right along. In 2020, the Sullivan County International Airport became a state Superfund site after two existing airport wells tested above a new state limit for PFAS chemicals. Since the 1970s until recently, PFAS were used and required in firefighting foam, since many airports host firefighter training. Many airports have found PFAS in their water. Three properties near the airport has reportedly repeatedly tested above the state limit for PFAS. In November 2021, the airport and the Department of Environmental Conservation started more testing to form a cleanup plan, which will be available for public input this spring. Our reporter, Meg Duff, talked with scientists and officials to learn more about how the PFAS impact our health and just how much is too much.
The Sullivan County International Airport is currently working on a state-ordered PFAS cleanup plan. But what exactly are PFAS and why do they matter? To learn more, I reached out to leading expert Linda Birnbaum.
I'm a scientist emeritus and former director of the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences, which is part of NIH.
She's been interested in PFAS since the 1980s.
They're called forever chemicals because we really have no way to get rid of them forever. 98-99% of all Americans have these chemicals in their body. They are everywhere.
In firefighting foam, a big source of PFAS pollution at airports, but also in nonstick pans,
in house dust,
waterproofing,
your tablecloth,
makeup, even food packaging.
There is even some data that shows that people who eat a lot of fast food tend to have higher levels of PFAS in their blood than people who don't eat a lot of fast food.
In New York, a ban on PFAS in food packaging will go into effect at the end of this year.
I think what it's important to understand is that if your water is not very contaminated, your drinking water may only represent 20% of your total exposure.
Birnbaum lives down in North Carolina. Recently, researchers tested her water.
So, you know, they came to my house and they sampled my water and so on. And I remember my water was around 50 total. So I thought that was fairly good, but I sure wish it were lower. There's a growing list of health effects that have been observed in people.
High cholesterol, cancer, thyroid and immune problems, and preeclampsia, maybe even less effective vaccines. So what does all this mean for the Sullivan County International Airport? Well, Airport Administrator Edward McAndrew says the airport's PFAS levels are actually pretty low.
It's not a whole lot of anything. It's essentially zero. Even the testing requirements, you can't wear certain types of clothes that might be treated with PFOA. It's that low a quantity that could throw off the results.
But how much PFAS is too much? In 2016, the EPA set a suggestion for PFAS in water at 70 parts per trillion. But Birnbaum told me,
the amount of new data that has arisen since then is practically astronomical.
The New York State limit is new, since 2020. It's 7 times stricter than the EPA's suggestion, but both are small, like a drop of food coloring versus a teaspoon in an Olympic-sized swimming pool. Still, some think the limits should be even lower. Here's Tracy Carluccio from the Delaware Riverkeeper Network.
What is the level that is most protective? There should be none in the water.
Because these chemicals stay in our bodies for years, even small amounts add up. Higher exposure means higher risk, but even low levels can cause health problems. According to Birnbaum, some studies even found evidence for more severe COVID.
The one that saw enhanced severity with elevated PFAS was done in Denmark, and their levels are lower than our levels. You know, those are background levels.
The New York PFAS limit and the EPA's suggestion only cover the original PFAS chemicals, PFOA and PFOS. Some states are also regulating the replacements.
Over 9,000 of them.
Birnbaum says these next-gen PFAS chemicals should be regulated as a group.
Unfortunately, the way that chemicals in commerce have been regulated pretty much until now is innocent until proven guilty. Instead of, let's test this to make sure it's not a problem before we expose people to it.
Soon, the EPA will require manufacturers to disclose which PFAS they make. It will also set a firm limit for drinking water. Closer to home, Sullivan County is suing the makers of PFAS, including DuPont and 3M.
We're not talking about, if you looked at the water, it would be fluorescent green. It's not like we're dealing with Three Mile Island or something, but it is a level that is compensable.
That's County Attorney Mike McGuire. Hundreds of airports and local governments are suing. Those cases will be tried in the South Carolina District Court. In Congress, District 19 Representative Antonio Delgado recently led a bill that would help people test private wells.
43 million Americans get their drinking water from well water, and this bill is especially important for folks in rural communities.
As Tracy Carluccio put it, information matters.
We never recommend worry, but we do recommend thoughtful action. When people have the information about whether or not it's in their water, if they feel, well, the state says 10 is fine and I'm 8, in my water, I'm not going to worry about it. That's their decision. But if you are a woman of childbearing age or you're breastfeeding, you may take a more defensive stance.
For WJFF Radio Catskill, this is Meg Duff.
This is the Local Edition. I'm your host, Patricia Rubio. We'll be right back.
This music can reach further than we've ever imagined into worlds that have so little to do with our culture, the culture of Ashkenazi Jews. The music transcends. It takes hold. Someone hears it, falls in love with it. That's why I'm so happy to share this with you. I'm Aaron Bendich, and I play a selection of Jewish recordings on Borscht Beat on Radio Catskill.
Sunday afternoon at 1.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. This week, we spend the hour with the iconic Dr. Jessica B. Harris, author of High on the Hog and many other books. No one tells the story of how African food changed America and the world like her. It's coming up on The Splendid Table.
The Splendid Table, Sunday morning at 11 on Radio Catskill.
And we're back on the Local Edition. I'm your host, Patricia Rubio. It's Friday.
It's
Sullivan 180 is a nonprofit organization that looks to help improve the health and well-being of Sullivan County. It's a new year, and Sullivan 180 is looking to encourage healthy behaviors for the new year. Here to tell us more is the Marketing and Communications Manager for Sullivan 180, Samantha Mango. Samantha, welcome back to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Yes, it's a new year. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Yes, everyone's health is on their mind, you know, around this time of year. It's a new year. Everyone's making resolutions, making goals to get healthier. How can Sullivan 180 be part of that and help people be healthier in a new year?
Yeah, we're launching a new community challenge for 2022. It's encouraging healthy behaviors, and it's based off of the county government's four pillars of health, and our pillar that we're helping do some work on is encouraging healthy behaviors. So within that, we've looked at our CHIP, which is the Community Health Improvement Plan, and we've pulled some commitments that our community members and local organizations can make in the coming year, really simple, easy changes in their life and their choices that can help make health changes within themselves. And eventually, these are evidence-based strategies that are known to improve health outcomes.
Can you expand on those healthy behaviors?
Sure. We have three commitments. The first is a goal of reducing smoking and vaping, and that's using the evidence-based strategy of using media and health communications to highlight the dangers of tobacco use and reshaping social norms around smoking and vaping. The second goal is reducing obesity. And that strategy is increasing the number of institutions and organizations within the county to follow nutritional standards for healthy food and beverage procurement. And the third is increasing physical activity. So that strategy is implementing obesity prevention guidelines.
This all seems like it's geared towards preventative care, preventing these other diseases from becoming worse, like heart disease and diabetes and things like that.
Yes, it's massively involved in prevention, which if you look at our health rankings, if we start with prevention, the major things that affect our health rankings later on in life can be changed eventually.
Right. And one of those things you mentioned is obesity, and that could have sort of a domino effect on your health. It could lead to heart disease, diabetes, and a whole number of other things that could be, like I said, could be preventative folks make healthier choices. But of course, during this pandemic, it's been really tough for some people, and a lot of people were making unhealthy choices during the pandemic. So sort of cope with the things going on. So I guess in the new year, you could sort of refocus and make those small changes that could lead to bigger changes down the road, like, you know, just make small changes to have a healthier lifestyle.
Yeah. And they're really simple and small changes. So we're not asking anyone or any organization to implement something that's massive or unattainable to reduce obesity. We're simply asking people to look at possibly eliminating sugar-sweetened beverages from their diet, or organizations specifically to look at their vending machines and see if they're following the American Heart Association healthy vending standards. That's very easy to do and would make a significant change.
If folks listen to this or an organization is listening to this and want to get involved, how can they do so?
Yeah, we'd love for any and all organizations within the county to get involved. And we're working with our community advisory board members, as well as the Sullivan County Chamber of Commerce business members. And we have a new page on our website under Encouraging Healthy Behaviors. So you can see the three goals and their strategies listed on there. And we also have the resources provided that are local resources. So if someone, let's say someone who works at Jeff Bank wants to work on reducing smoking and vaping, we have resources on there for the tobacco-free action community, the American Lung Association, ways to get involved in No Tobacco Day or Take Down Tobacco. There's websites and emails listed right on the website, so it's very easy to find the help that you need.
And what is that website?
It's Sullivan180.org.
Now, looking at the website, I see that if an organization achieves a certain achievement, I guess, they're rewarded with some kind of award program. Can you sort of expand on that?
Yes, we've asked our community advisory board, which is almost 40 organizations throughout the county, to commit to these three goals over the next year. So we will ask the members of these organizations to submit their proof of commitments. So, for example, if an organization like SUNY Sullivan wants to increase their physical activity, they can come out to the Snow and W event, which is on February 26th on the Liberty Rail Trail. And that's an outdoor fun run along the O&W Trail in Liberty. They can take a picture at the trailhead and just click submit goal work here. And that's their proof of commitment. And then in October, when we have our advisory board meeting, we'll be presenting medals of achievement.
Anything else that we have not touched on that you want our listeners to know about?
I would like to mention, as I just said about the Snow and W, we have the Snow and W event coming up on the O&W Rail Trail. So we're working with the county, the O&W Alliance, Fortress Bikes, Sullivan Renaissance, and we're doing this along the rail trail in Liberty, and we're hoping to have snow on the ground. Right now we don't. It's going to happen either way, but we will have snowshoes on site. It'll be a fun run. The full run is about a 5K. It's a run, it's a walk, it's a snowshoe, it's family friendly. It's a way to get out of the house in February. So it's a free event. We ask for registration beforehand, and you can register on sullivan180.org, but it should be a really fun day.
That sounds fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us. We were talking to Samantha Mango from Sullivan 180, talking about encouraging healthy behaviors in the new year, and check out all this that's going on the website, sullivan180.org. Samantha, thank you so much for joining us again.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
This is the Local Edition. I'm your host, Patricia Robayo. As you can tell, that interview was recorded earlier this week. And guess what? There's snow on the ground. So those who are attending that event this weekend will have a good time with snow on the ground. Like I said, this is the Local Edition. Thank you for joining us on your Friday evening. Thank you to Garnet Health for letting us know about the COVID-19 pediatric hospitalization rates. Also, thank you to our reporter, Meg Duff, for letting us know about PFAS and why that chemical is at the Sullivan County International Airport. Also, thank you again to Samantha Mango from the Sullivan 180, letting us know that the start of the new year, you got to think healthy and make suggestions for healthy behaviors. We'll be back on Monday with an exclusive interview with the chairman of the legislature, Rob Dorvey. You'll be talking to Jason. That conversation is happening at 6:30 on Monday. You do not want to miss that. But if you ever miss the show, we have a podcast. You can find us anywhere you find your podcast. It's on Google, Apple, Stitcher. Search for WJFF, The Local Edition. Subscribe, share it, tell your friends. Visit our website, wjffradio.org/thelocaledition. I'll tell you that one more time. wjffradio.org/thelocaledition. You can find upcoming guests, see past guests, and listen to the show. You've been listening to The Local Edition. I was your host, Patricia Robayo. Have a good night, Lucy. Let's take a look one more time at the weather. For tonight, snow showers. I just went outside a little while ago. It's cold. Low of 9. Saturday, mostly sunny, high of 29. And on Saturday night, partly cloudy, low of 18. And on Sunday, it's freezing rain, high of 35. And on Sunday night, snow again, low of 17. You've been listening to The Local Edition. Coming up, it's the mixtape. This is Radio Catskill, your NPR station, WJFF Jeffersonville. Here comes the mixtape. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for joining me. Have a good night.
Support comes from 52 and Vine, a wine and spirit shop in Jeffersonville featuring local, national, and eclectic vintners and distillers. 52andVine.com. And from listener donations at WJFFradio.org. Support for Radio Catskill comes from Liza Phillips Design, sustainably sourced natural fiber rugs for floors and stairs. Designed in Narrowsburg, handmade in Nepal. By appointment and on the web at LizaPhillipsDesign.com.
WJFF Jeffersonville. You're listening to Radio Catskill.